everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It's Friday morning, which means it's time for the weekend review and preview conversation, where my guests will recap how markets have performed over the past few sessions and preview what you can expect in the week ahead. Today's conversation will primarily focus on the corporate reporting season, as well as equity positioning. Joining us for the conversation, I'm glad to welcome back Matthew Tormey, Equity Strategist Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Matt, welcome. We're happy to have you.
Hey, good morning, Siobhan, and thanks for having me.
So let's get started. This week commenced the quarter one corporate reporting season. What are your early reflections as well as expectations for broader reporting over the next few weeks?
Yeah, so it's still very early in the first quarter earnings season. We've only had about 15% of the S&P 500 market cap reports so far, and the majority of the results have come from the financials. So just giving a quick recap of how the results are coming in relative to our expectations. Although just under 60% of companies are beating sale estimates, 75% are beating earnings estimates, which is better than the historical average. In aggregate, earnings are beating by 9%, which is better than our initial expectations for a 4 to 6% beat. Corporate profits are pacing to grow by low single digits, but by the time this earnings season is over, we are expecting S&P 500 earnings to grow 7 to 9%, which is similar to the rate that we did see in the fourth quarter of 2023. And sales growth is coming in just shy of 4% right now. And if this is where we ended up at the end of the earnings season, it would mark a continued pickup from the second and third quarters in 2023, but would be in line with the fourth quarter result. And if we look at the guidance so far, for the second quarter earnings per share estimate for those companies that have already reported, the median estimate is marginally lower relative to the day before they reported, which is encouraging given we usually see corporate America guide analysts to lower their estimates throughout the course of a quarter. Now, like I mentioned earlier, the banks are the largest group to have reported so far. So just a few key takeaways from their results. First, net interest income is lower on the quarter, but came in generally better than expectations. However, management's lack of guidance and revisions to the upside was likely the source of the negative stock price reactions. Second, the credit outlook remains relatively benign, and while trends are consistent with normalization, delinquency formation is slowing, so encouraging signs on the consumer front, and also just additionally on the consumer. Although we did see that a few retailers that reported earlier, they did express some concerns about the consumer. We believe, though, that many of these issues are idiosyncratic in nature because comments from the big banks this past week did indicate that the consumer was generally in fine shape. A third, we're seeing a solid rebound in capital markets activity. And fourth, the banks continue to build up on capital, which has improved CET1 ratios following an increase in regulatory proposals. But we did see some return to share buybacks alongside generally conservative tones from management teams.
Now, in terms of the equity market performance, investors have recently given back some gains. What are your thoughts on recent performance and the anticipated drivers behind performance in the months ahead?
Yes. So the last time the S&P hit a record high, it came at the end of March. And since then, it's pulled back by about 5%. And in our view, we think there have been a few drivers of this recent weakness. So first, inflation data hasn't been cooling off at the pace that investors have been hoping for. And this, combined with economic growth that has been resilient, has pushed out Fed rate cut expectations. In fact, the market's now expecting closer to just 1.5 rate cuts this year after starting off the year expecting nearly 6. So this is quite a dramatic change. And additionally, Fed Chair Powell this week expressed disappointment over the recent inflation data and suggests rates can stay higher for longer if inflation persists. And this was a view that was echoed by other recent Fed speakers. Second, geopolitical fears of a broader escalation in the Middle East have risen after Iran's attack over the weekend. And although news is still emerging, last night we may have had a potential response from Israel. And third, after reaching a record high at the end of March, we're coming off of one of the best six-month return periods for the S&P 500 going back 80 or so years. And what this has done was it lifted different valuation, sentiment and positioning indicators to elevated levels, meaning good news and positive market dynamics were really being priced into large cap stocks. Now, when it comes to the drivers behind why we continue to expect upside for stocks this year, we've been highlighting that we expect economic growth to remain solid. Disinflation trends should continue. The Fed is still on track to cut rates later this year, and unprecedented AI investments should support greater efficiencies in earnings growth. And also on earnings growth, one key theme that we do expect to play out this quarter is a broadening out of the earnings backdrop. Because if we look at S&P 500 profit growth over the past four quarters, all of it's been driven by the Mag 7 if you compare the group to the rest of the index. But starting this quarter, the rest of the index should see modest positive growth again. And ultimately, we believe this will be supportive for other areas of the equity market as well.
Now, with the insights that you just provided, can you remind us of CIO's recommendations when it comes to equity positioning?
Definitely. So no major equity positioning changes over the past month or so on our side. But just to recap for our listeners how it currently stands. So on sectors, we do have most preferred views on tech, healthcare, and industrials. So with tech, we do think that AI infrastructure spending remains robust. And here in CIO, one of our preferences across asset classes is focusing on high quality areas of the market. And tech is one of the highest quality sectors out there based on a few different metrics. With healthcare, this is our preferred defensive sector, as we do think that the group as a whole is going to experience faster earnings growth relative to the other defensives, and exposure to promising new drug therapies in large untapped end markets such as Alzheimer's and obesity, we think offers investors an attractive opportunity. And on industrials, we're starting to see an improvement in manufacturing sentiment with the ISM Manufacturing Index now back in expansionary territory, and the defense segment should benefit from the current geopolitical environment. And on our least preferred side for our sector positioning, we think that the real estate sector is going to continue to be the current higher for longer rate environment. And utilities are unlikely to outperform in the near term, given increased regulatory risk and a likely continuation of resilient economic data. Although over the past month or two, we have seen the sector benefit more from growing appreciation. The build out of AI data centers will drive a significant increase in power consumption. So this is something that we are continuing to monitor. And on size segments, we do continue to have a preference for small caps, as we expect the group to benefit from a broadening out in earnings trends that we think will become apparent during this earnings season. A lower interest rate, as we do still expect the Fed to cut rates twice this year in our base case, and very attractive relative valuations.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation, Matt, and I want to turn to next week. What is taking place that investors should keep an eye on?
Yeah, so next week's going to be very busy on both the economic and earnings calendars, so diving right into it. If we look on the economic calendar, starting with Tuesday next week, we will receive two housing-related data points with the final reading on building permits for March, as well as new home sales, which is expected to increase a bit from the prior month. Manufacturing side, we'll get the preliminary April reading for the market PMI Manufacturing Index, as well as the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index. And rounding out the day, we'll also receive the market PMI Services Index preliminary reading for April. If we turn to Wednesday, durable goods orders for March are expected to come in at a slower increase relative to the prior reading. On Thursday, it'll be a busy day. So we'll receive the first reading for first quarter GDP, which is expected to come in at around 2%. So a bit of a slowdown in the fourth quarter, but still solid. Another regional Fed manufacturing index, this time from the Kansas City Fed. Pending home sales for March are expected to fall slightly versus the prior month after posting a positive low single digit increase previously. And as always, we'll receive the weekly continuing and initial jobless claims figures, which continue to be indices we're keeping a close eye on, but still remain near benign levels. And lastly, on Friday, maybe the most important data point of the week will be the March core PCE reading. As investors continue to look for signs that inflation is improving, as we've been discussing, as Fed rate cut expectations continue to be pushed out since the start of the year. Additionally, we'll receive a couple consumer-related data points as we get updates on March personal income and personal spending, as well as the April reading for the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index, which is expected to be basically unchanged from the prior month. Now, if we look at the earnings calendar for next week, it's going to be very busy. It's going to be the busiest week of earnings season, as we'll get 50% of the entire market cap for the S&P 500 reported. And this does include most of the mega caps across the different sectors, as well as more than half of the Magnificent Seven.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Matt.
Thanks, Siobhan.
Again, today we have been joined by Matthew Tormey, Equity Strategist Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. From UBS Studios, I'm Siobhan Chapman, and thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.